Hey, if you're enjoying this show, consider supporting us on our Patreon. You can get cool perks like access to these episodes a week before they go public, and you can pick an album for us to review. Any support is greatly appreciated, so if you feel inclined, go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress.
This is Polyphonic Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random and analyze it track by track. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
Hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
And basically, if you don't know how the show works, we review classic albums and we have no idea what album we're going to be reviewing. We have a random album generator in front of us. So we're going to hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week.
Mm-hmm.
The album we're going to be listening to is Dr. John and Ooh. Dr. John's Gumbo.
All right.
Cool. All right. So let's see. Dr. John's Gumbo, released in 1972, is the fifth studio album by New Orleans singer and pianist Dr. John, a tribute to the music of his native city. The album is a collective of covers of New Orleans classics played by a major figure in the city's music. Cool. It marked the beginning of Dr. John's transition away from the eccentric stage character that earned him a cult following and towards a more straightforward image based on New Orleans R&B traditions. In 2012, the album was ranked number 404 on Rolling Stone's list of 500 greatest albums of all time. Cool. All right. So the first song on the album is a song called Aiko Aiko, which is a cover of a song by James Sugar Boy Crawford and his Cane Cutters.
There you go.
Pretty cool. All right. So here we go. Here's first song on the album called Aiko Aiko. So that was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That was a cool list.
This is going to be a good album. I just know.
It was a cool way to open up the album. Mm-hmm. I can just see like marching down the street in New Orleans on a bright sunny day, like all the people, you know, singing this song and all the, like a marching band or something playing and, you know,
yeah,
that's kind of the image that I get when I was listening to that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's I mean, if you're going to do an album of like traditional like Zydeco songs, I mean, that's pretty much, that's the song you kind of have to start with.
Yeah.
It belongs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. The thing is, it kind of had that Bo Diddley beat going for it.
Well, that's where Bo Diddley got it. He got it from Zydeco.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was, you know, it was kind of just driven mostly by the rhythm. And, you know, I was kind of mostly stayed on one chord. But yeah, I mean, even though there wasn't much change in the music, it didn't feel like it was dragging or anything like that. It was always, you know, it kept the interest going.
Yeah. It's actually got pretty standard blues changes.
Mm-hmm.
So wasn't really staying on the one chord. It's definitely a 1-4-5.
Yeah. But they didn't really, it didn't really deviate from that or anything.
No, like it didn't.
You know.
No.
Yeah. Like it was, I mean, it was the, I didn't, I don't mean it was one chord. I mean, it was like the same chords repeating. It was like, it didn't go up to the chorus or anything like that. It was,
there was a key change for like a short musical bridge.
Yeah.
But yeah. Other than that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, but really, but like it was just full of energy and just,
oh yeah. You know,
It's a great way to open up the album.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the next song is called Blow Wind Blow, and that is by Huey Piano Smith. It's an old R&B, Southern R&B thing. So here we go. This is Blow Wind Blow. Man, he's good.
Yeah.
That piano breakdown, that was so cool.
I was going to mention that piano breakdown. Just, yeah, this guy's like a total talent.
Yeah.
I've known that for a long time.
First of all, I love his voice, and there's no mistaking that voice. I mean, nobody else sounds like him.
Not quite. Nope.
I think, this song I really liked. I wouldn't say I like it better than the first song, but I think this one was a little more laid back. I hate to use the word lazy, but I don't mean that in the sense that he's not trying. I mean that
it seems effortless,
a little more relaxed, I guess, is the word.
It's like the music is just kind of going along on its own.
Yeah.
And he's just kind of jumbling along with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's like, his voice is just kind of easing into it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, he's not, I'm not saying he's not putting any effort in, but it's just like, I don't really know how to put it into words. I don't know quite how to describe it, but,
I think I understand what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the cool things I liked about this in the rhythm is the bongos that were playing throughout it.
Mm.
That really added some flavor and a really cool feel to just kind of drive the song along. That was really, I mean, kind of an odd choice, but I think it definitely works.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about, I was just reading about the album, and I was thinking, like, this sonically, this sounds really good, and it doesn't sound like it was recorded in the early 70s. It sounds a little more a little later than that. And sure enough, it was recorded at Sound City.
Okay. Well, there you go.
So it's like, oh, okay, that it's the room. It's, you know, it's the way the room is.
I've heard lots of different things from the early 70s, actually, that sounded like quite possibly a bunch of them were recorded. Okay. Actually, yeah. One that comes straight to my mind is, Dominic Triano, his first solo album, which was recorded at Sound City.
Yep.
It's got that same sort of tonal quality, but it was also recorded in 1972. So I actually sort of equate that sound to about 1972 for me.
Okay. Yeah.
So, yeah. Because I know there's a few others out there. Yeah. That was one hell of a studio.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And apparently they're up and running again. So,
well, I thought, that Neve console,
the console, they sold it to Dave Grohl.
I know.
But the studio itself is up and running again.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So, you know, if you want to record there and get that sound, you can book some time at Sound City. So, that studio, I mean, there's a reason there's a documentary about it. I mean, so many people have recorded there, and nobody can explain why the room sounds as good as it does, because it, you know, wasn't designed to sound.
It's this weird little shack stuck under a highway, isn't it?
Yeah, in suburban Los Van Angeles. Nine.
Yeah.
So it's completely out of the way, which I think maybe is a good thing, you know, less distractions. You can just kind of focus on your work and get done. There's no, let's go to the club instead of record, you know.
I mean, the room is probably the way it is partly because it was built to fit where it was more than being built to be, you know, a standard whereby, well, room. In fact, actually, recording studios, I already know, you want as few right angles to each other.
Yeah, but it wasn't built as a recording studio. It was originally a Vox amplifier factory that was converted to a studio. So there's no reason for, like, it wasn't designed with acoustics in mind.
No, I know, but that's why I mean it was built to fit in its really strange spot.
Yeah.
And which means that the walls are going to be a little different. They're not going to be straight up and down as if they had like a wide open field to build it in.
Right.
So it's got something to do with it.
Yeah.
Sure.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. But like they just built it because, you know,
yeah,
they needed to building. And it just so happened that, you know, it's an amazing room to record in.
Mm-hmm.
It's just one of those things. There's a little history lesson for you.
Yeah.
But anyway, the next song is Big Chief, and it's a song by Earl King.
Okay.
So here we go. That was cool.
Yep.
That was cool and different. I like the organ in there. You don't usually hear the organ playing those kinds of riffs and notes. You kind of, the organ is more like a pad is most commonly used.
Yeah, you usually hear it do like a swirl as opposed to like doing like this trilly thing up in the higher register, which obviously it's capable of doing. I mean, much like the piano, the organ was designed as like a lead instrument, but it's always it's oftentimes sort of like an extra they add into the background, yeah. Unless you're like Deep Purple and everything's like driving forward with it, but that's different.
Mm-hmm.
I love organ driven. Anyway, yeah, it was a very different approach. I guess he's got on like a flute setting or something like that, and he's got a bit of a warble going on into it, so that's pretty sweet. And everything else is like, you know, the bass line is just really basic, doesn't need to do anything other than like those four notes per bar, and it's just and the drums along with like a tambourine just make everything just sort of shake a bit.
Yeah,
pretty sweet.
Yeah, no, it was cool, and you know, very minimal instruments.
Yes,
but you know, that's all you need, really. I mean, there, yep. You know, didn't feel like anything was missing or anything like that.
Nope.
Yeah, no, that was really cool and different, and you know. Yeah, it's just, I wonder, like, I know these are all covers, or mostly covers, but, yeah, I just wonder what the choice for some of these would be, like, you know, I just wonder, like, you know, hearing the song and deciding to do something different than the original, but still kind of keeping... I don't know what I'm talking about because I don't think I'm familiar with the original version of this song, but it could be an exact duplicate of the original. I don't know.
I don't think
no.
It's, I think the original, if I'm not mistaken, I think he was actually a guitar player, and I don't think there's any guitar in this at all.
No.
I'm not 100% sure on that. Don't hold me to it.
Yeah, well, Earl King, who's
He's a guitar player, isn't he?
He's a guitar player.
So yeah, and he was primarily known as like being like this blues guitar hero from the day. That's what I've heard the name. I'm quite certain I've heard some of the music, but sometimes they all kind of bleed together, and it's a little bit hard for me to differentiate them from sometimes. And you hear a name, and you go, "Isn't that guy?" I think I can sometimes see him, and I think I can sometimes hear him, but yeah.
Yeah, well, I think, wasn't it like the three kings of the blues? It was B.B. King,
he's not Albert one of them.
King, and who was the other one?
Freddie King.
Freddie King, right.
Those are the three big kings. Earl King was, it's kind of like the fourth king, but he wasn't as well known, and I think he might have come before. I'm not 100% sure on that. Albert King and Freddie King and B.B. King were, you know, they were doing stuff back in 40s, early 50s, but they were really getting to be known around mid 50s throughout the 60s into the 70s even.
Mm-hmm.
they had long careers, all three of them.
Yeah.
And I love all three of them.
Oh, yeah. 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 I don't remember what we were, the point of that was, but,
you're talking about the song.
Guitar. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting to take, a song that is a guitar driven song and sort of take the guitar out of it, which, you know, you would think, well, why would you do that? But basically, you know, if it's a good song, you can really do anything with it and it'll still be a good song.
Yeah. The song, if it can carry out, you can swap out any instrument you want and do it however you want. Yeah. Play it on, you know, mandolins and tuba. I don't know. Doesn't matter. I mean, if there's a way to do it, they could probably make it cool.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, actually, that would be cool. Mandolins and tuba.
That was just the first thing that came to mind. I could have picked anything.
Yeah.
So. Well, anyway. Kazoo and triangle. I don't know.
Sure. I'm sure it would probably sound,
different. Cool.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on. The next song is called, Somebody Changed the Lock. And it's a song by, this is an original.
Okay.
So it was interesting. Okay. So Dr. John's real name is Malcolm John Rubinek Jr. So, yes. It's credited to I guess his songwriting name is Mac Rubinek, which is actually kind of a cool name.
That's a cool name. That could have been a stage name, Mac Rubinek.
Yeah.
I'm going to go see Mac Rubinek tonight.
Yeah.
Going to get blast.
So this is the original song called Somebody Changed the Lock. That's the sound I associate with New Orleans.
Yeah. That's a very New Orleans porn section, especially going where it's almost, it's very chaotic in the background, almost like everybody's playing whatever.
Yeah.
But it still fits together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great. I love that. Mm-hmm. It's another one of those things where, it's very relaxed and very sort of easy, just like the other song, but in a different way. It was really cool. I don't know what else to say. I mean, it's just, that's the feeling of it and just the way that it was dragging, not dragging in a bad way, but just kind of chugging along. It was very cool.
Yeah. It's like a train going through a curve that you don't want to take too fast.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like going along and, not trying to, you know, it's not meant like it's feeling like you got anything better to do. You're doing this music and you could spend all day doing it.
Yeah.
It's kind of got that sort of feel to it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just basically jamming and just kind of... It almost feels improvised, but not sort of like organized improvisation, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what professional musicians sound like.
Yeah. Basically, yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Dr. John's like piano outro.
That was cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. Watching the end of the thing, thinking the song sounds like it's sort of wrapping up here, but there's a little bit of extra time there. What's going to happen? And then just that sort of nice little piano outro going. And I'm like, okay, that's what he's doing with that space.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
That was, yeah. I always love endings like that. That was, yeah. Very cool. Very cool. So the next song is a cover. I know this song. It's a Ray Charles cover, but it was written by Ahmet Erdogan, who I think he was ahead of a record label.
He might have been. I think he started out as a songwriter, but yeah, he's I don't know if he's still around, but he was around quite a bit, and you would see him in interviews as late as certainly the 90s, and I think even later than that. he was up there in the music industry for quite a while. But yeah, to mess around, good song. So I'm not going to knock his, you know, songwriting chops. No. He wrote this. Clearly he's good.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. All right. So here's a cover of Ray Charles' Mess Around, written by Ahmet Erdogan. So that was really cool. That was a cool cover. That felt kind of like almost like a gospel thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting how it almost had that sort of flavor to it, especially around the middle mark. I started to really hear it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That drum, the drum line in that was... That's not an easy thing to play for 3 minutes straight.
No, it was pretty pretty lively. Pretty
yeah.
Well, he was playing in double time, really. I mean, yeah. You know,
I did kind of miss that horn, that classic horn horn section note, the saxophone. What's the word I'm looking for? That classic line from the Ray Charles original was kind of that always sounded like an integral part to it. It's not really like 100% necessary in the song, but I did kind of miss it. And for a second there, I thought there was someone was going to come in because, again, they have the horn section, but it never really did wind up, being in there. So, but that's all right. Fine. It's not actually a complaint. I was just, you know, making a note.
Yeah. It's something you were expecting, but never really.
It didn't come. Off. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Yeah.
Still a really good cover.
Yeah. Whenever I hear this song, I always think of the scene in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Of course. Yep. I mean, yeah. You know. I was thinking that too. Yep.
Yeah. yeah. Basically, if you don't know what we're talking about, it's John Candy.
Oh, don't worry. They can buff that out. No problem.
John Candy playing, like, you know, listening to the song, Steve Martin's sleeping in the passenger seat. He's like doing the thing and playing the piano on the dashboard and stuff. And then his
while he's driving.
And then his coat gets caught in the window roller. And then his coat gets caught on both arms and he can't grip the steering wheel. So it's just, I'm not doing it justice. You just have to watch it. If you don't, you're not familiar with the scene, but
it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, that's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm basically that this is the song, the Ray Charles version anyway, that, is in that movie. But yeah, this kind of felt like this version, it kind of felt like I don't know what you would call it, but it's like, I guess it happens a lot in R&B, or at least it used to in a lot of like R&B and soul music, where you would play the song and then you would kind of like ramp it up at the end and play double time towards the end. This whole song felt like the ending to one of those.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of had the whole song had that feeling to it.
Just balls to the walls from start to finish.
Right. Yep. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Which is cool. I mean, that's really cool. So the next song, I'm pretty sure I know this song too. This Let the Good Times Roll. Another Earl King song.
There you go.
So there we go. Here's Let the Good Times Roll. It's not the song I was thinking of, but that was a cool...
That's the one I was wondering. Yeah, there's a couple have got sort of like that thing. That's the one that Jimi Hendrix covered on Electric Lady. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking it was a good possibility it might be that.
Yeah, I was thinking
when you said it was Earl King.
So. Yeah, I was thinking it was the old blues song.
Mm.
But I can't remember who does it. But anyway, that was a cool cover anyway. I mean, I'm not disappointed. I'm just, you know, I just thought it didn't think it was that song. This was cool. This was a little more lively, I guess. And this one had a little more energy, maybe. I don't know.
It had a little bit more grit to it.
Yeah.
And I think it was partly because of the addition of that guitar, which I thought it could have been a little higher in the mix.
Yeah.
It was a little quiet. Still, it was fantastic. I loved that guitar line when it's just introducing. I've always loved that part of that song.
Yeah.
With do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Yeah.
It's just cool.
Yeah. The horns and everything were, there really wasn't a bad part to that.
No, I don't think you're going to hear too many bad parts on this album.
No, no.
just no. Saying. I'm going to say that now.
Yeah. but I mean, this song in particular, it just seemed like everything really came together really well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it was really cool. Yeah, I mean, I don't really have much else to say about it. I mean, it was really, really well done.
Yep.
So the next song is called Junko Partner. And it's a song by a guy named Bob Shad, who I don't know who that is. Obviously, a musician from New Orleans. But I'm curious, so here we go. This is Junko Partner. That was cool. That's what I would describe that as, like a jumping blues kind of feel.
It's going back to sort of like that Zydeco feel. Again, this one's a little bit more pure Zydeco, but yeah, it's got that jumping blues sort of thing going to it. I love that bass line, which is playing the part of the tuba and even sounds a bit tuba-ish, but you can definitely tell it's an electric bass.
Yeah.
What else was I going to say about that? Drum break in the middle.
Yeah.
Where you really got to hear the rhythm like up front without anything in the middle of it. And you just realize what the drums are doing. It's fantastic.
Yeah. It's subtle, but, yeah. Oh yeah. That was amazing. Yeah. I think this might be my favorite song so far. It's hard to say.
Hard to pick a
favorite
out of all this.
Yeah. The musicians on this are playing really well. I mean, and then on top of that, Dr. John's piano was,
of course,
really, I mean, he's always, but the thing is, he's doing all this complicated stuff, but it's like, he's not showing off, you know what I mean? Like, he's just playing the song.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, it's...
Yeah, he's just got that style to him. Like, if you think he's showing off, he's not showing off. He's just, his fingers are just all over the place. Anyway, that's just the way he plays.
Yeah.
He's always been like that.
Yeah, but
it never sounds bad.
No, it never, You know, some musicians, some guitar players, will play solos that don't quite fit the song, or play parts that are, unnecessarily complicated. And it just doesn't quite fit, but I don't feel like he's doing that. It feels like he's playing these parts that are, you know, they're not simple, easy, one note parts, but they don't, sound like they don't belong.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He knows what he's doing, basically.
Yeah. You know?
And he's making choices that, you know, fit the song.
Yeah. I'm just suddenly realizing we're about halfway through this, maybe a little bit past, this being 2022. Always sound like I'm stuttering when I say that. That's a lot of twos, man. Anyway, so this album is, I guess, turning 50 this year. And I was thinking it was 10 years since he put out, not his last one, his second last one before he passed a few years ago, which was, I made sure I went out and got it because that was the one that Dan Auerbach produced.
Oh yeah.
Did you ever hear that one?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a really good album.
Cool.
Anytime I get a chance to talk about that one, I'm gonna. So
yeah.
this is a good enough chance to talk about it.
Cool. I'll have to check that out. Yeah, I don't think I ever heard it, so. Cool, yeah. A lot of albums are going to be turning 50 this year. I think, like, Exile on Main Street.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, yeah.
Well, just think how many classic albums turned 50 last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, time keeps going.
Deep Purple Machine Head turns 50 this year.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Led Zeppelin 4 turned 50 last year.
Yep.
Yeah. Things like that.
But those albums are only 20 years old.
I remember when I was in high school, 30 years since Dark Side of the Moon was out. Next year, it'll be 50. Crazy. Whatever.
That's, we're getting old, man.
Guess so.
Yep. Anyway, now that we're past that existential crisis, let's move on to the next song. It's called Stack a Lee. And I think this is not, I don't know who wrote it. It's listed as traditional. So
it's been around.
Obviously
the song is very early 20th century. I would peg it around probably I always imagined it being 1920s. I'm not 100% sure about that, but obviously the song's old enough. Nobody really knows who wrote it, but like everybody and their uncle has covered it.
Basically before they figured out copyright for music.
I think it probably, it was amongst, copyright wasn't really the concern amongst, I mean, people sort of laid claim to things, but then when other people sort of abscond with whatever before it ever reaches a recording executive, and only by that point did somebody really consider, you know, somebody's got to put a copyright on this, but the song was too old. It passed through too many people, and too many people had heard it. Nobody could lay claim to it, but so, yeah, there's lots of songs like that.
Yes, there are. Yeah. Anyway, here we are. Here's Dr. John's version of Stack a Lee. That was I was mostly listening to the bass in that song. It was really kind of doing some cool stuff, just kind of driving the song, but in a way that how to say it, but it's just the way that it was driving the song was really, really interesting.
Yeah, sort of a uncomplicated, but it was understated, but. Again, wasn't doing anything more than it had to do.
Yeah. It was just kind of playing a walking bass line, I guess.
Yeah.
The other thing I noticed in there, it's buried pretty low in the mix. The organ was doing some interesting stuff too.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was well done. I'm not familiar with this song, so I don't know. I don't have anything to compare it to. This is the only version that I've heard. Oh.
Every time you hear it, the lyrics are going to be a little bit different. I forget there's a really famous version, and I think it was like, I don't know, it was 1960s anyway, and I think it was like a Motown thing or a Stax record thing. I can't remember. I can't remember who it was that did it. That's a fairly well-known version of it.
Hmm.
And again, it sort of tells more of the story of the argument between Stack Lee and Billy. So, whereas this one starts off with him shooting Billy. So, yeah, I mean, I've heard several different versions of it.
Yeah.
So.
So there's a lot of people who have done this song.
Yeah. Told you.
So sometimes it's Staggerly.
Yes.
Or Stagoli. 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 I've heard of the song.
Mm-hmm.
I don't... So there's a huge list. Pat Boone did it. I don't think that's the version you're thinking of though.
Nope.
The Righteous Brother, James Brown, Wilson Pickett,
Tom
Rush, maybe Doc Watson, Taj Mahal, Tommy Rowe, Youngbloods, Grateful Dead.
It could have been Wilson Pickett. Can't remember exactly, but it could have been. Yeah, it's been covered a lot.
Yeah. Interesting. Cool. I've heard of the song, but I've never heard it. And Nick Cave did a version or did a song called Stagger Lee on his album Murder Ballads, but he
changed it again.
It's a song he wrote, but it's called Stagger Lee. So I guess it's kind of like paying tribute to this.
He's sort of retelling the story.
Yeah, but it's
darker.
Yeah. Well, it's
it's on Murder Ballads.
It's on Murder Ballads, and it's
and it's Cave.
Dave. So yeah.
Okay.
So you know, it's not this song. He, you know, wrote a song. This song is, a lot of people have done this song. It's interesting. I want to listen to some of the other versions to see how they differ.
There's a lot of good ones.
Yeah. Cool. Moving on, the next song is called Tipitina, and it is, who originally did this? This is Professor Longhair.
Okay.
It's one of his songs.
He's very, definitely very Zydeco. Sort of very New Orleans.
Yeah. So here we go. Here's Tipitina. Very cool. Just him and his piano.
Yep.
That was cool. I like that. I kind of get the feeling of him just by himself in a, you know, hole in the wall in, you know, downtown New Orleans, just playing. That was really cool. I'm glad he did a song like
Dank.
That. Yeah. I'm glad he did a song like that. I mean, it's, he's really, I wouldn't say he's all over the place with this album, but he's really kind of painting a diverse picture of all the sort of different styles that have come out of New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's a jambalaya.
Yeah.
Stock. Like a good old gumbo.
Exactly. Well, that's what it is.
Yeah.
I had a thought, but I can't remember what it was. I lost it.
I'm sorry.
It's all right. It happens.
But the dank.
But the dank. The dank, Mo.
Yeah.
Anyway. So the next song is called Those Lonely Nights. That was another Earl King song, by the way.
Got three on there, and they're three really good ones.
Yeah.
That bass line is great.
Yeah. And this was a little more guitar driven.
Just a bit. Yeah.
You know. Just a great blues song. I mean, you know, that's what it was. It's a
pretty straightforward blues song, but yeah. Ain't nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. No. Don't have I don't have too much to say about it. I mean, other than it was great.
Yep.
Yeah. So we've got two songs left, and this one is a medley of, so he must be a really big fan of this guy Huey Piano Smith, because this is, I think, the third song that he's done by him, or the second anyway. The medley consists of three songs, or called High Blood Pressure, Don't You Just Know It, and We'll All Be John Brown.
Okay.
So let's hear the medley.
I might recognize a couple in there. Yeah. We'll see.
All right. Here we go. That was really cool. It was, I like the subtle transition between the three songs.
Yeah, he made it sound like they weren't even three songs.
Yeah.
Yeah. I certainly recognize that middle one because Sonics covered that one.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Cool.
I knew it was an older song too. I'm sure I've heard earlier versions of it too. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really cool. Really cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I like the call and response with the backup singers. That was really cool.
Yeah.
It's just a fun song, really. I mean, it's just fun. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
that was, and yeah, I'm sure this, yeah, Huey P. N. O. Smith is a big, influence on him for sure. Mm-hmm.
Who is this guy? Well, he's still going. He's 88 years old.
Holy crap. He's still out there.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Jazz blues piano guy from New Orleans.
Nice.
Kind of started around the same time as Fats Domino, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. I would say so. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, we've arrived at the final song on the album, and it is called Little Liza Jane. So here we go.
All right.
So I think that might be my favorite song on the album.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
I love how, again, it's those drums. There's something about that New Orleans Zydeco drum sound that's so incredibly different than drums on practically anything else.
Yeah.
And it's like the drums aren't so much keeping time, but they are definitely establishing the rhythm. The bass line is keeping the time.
Yeah.
And for the most part in that. It's a completely different approach.
Yeah. Well, it's more of a jazz approach than...
Yeah.
Than anything. A lot of jazz is, the drums will be sort of almost a lead instrument, I guess.
Yeah. Almost.
Sort of more implying the rhythm rather than keeping time.
Right. Exactly. It's still essential for getting the feel and the whole rhythm. Yeah. That whole rhythm feel. Without it there, it'd be very hard to make it sound the way that Zydeco was. I guess they've done it before. I mean, when you're marching through the streets, it's mostly, you know, horns and whatnot. There's not usually a guy with a drum. Guess maybe there could be, but usually there isn't. Yeah, it really does like set that sort of rhythm going and everybody else is around it. But there's no kick drum really keeping like the time. There's no one clear 1, 2, 3, 4. The closest thing you're going to get from that is the bass line. So the bass line, his job is suddenly a little bit more important that there, because he's got to keep that time so everybody else doesn't go into complete and utter chaos.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it just kind of livens things up, and
it really does.
It feels like, almost it gives it like sort of a celebratory kind of feel. Like, yes. This is like a, you know, a celebration of a victory of some sort or something like that.
Or celebrating someone's life at their funeral, as it often was used.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, no, it was cool. And yeah, it's the drums are, I think that's probably why I like this song so much. It's that lively kind of feel that the drums have.
It's almost a bit of a marching band thing, but again, jazzier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know the technical term for it with, you know, dotted quarter note or something. I don't know, but, yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad we listened to this album, because it's cool. It's you know, it's paying tribute to a place that, I mean, Dr. John is obviously, you know, from New Orleans, and he's, you know, paying tribute to his hometown, basically. It's cool that, you know, New Orleans is such a small region, but so much music has come out of that place. And so much different music has come out of that place. I mean, it's all connected and similar, but you know, there was the song where it's just him and his piano. There's the jazzy sort of stuff. There's all this different kind of music that's happening, all in this place. And this album is just, you know, paying tribute to that. It's really, when you think about it, it's really a remarkable thing. And I think it's, I don't know why that happened in that place. And it all kind of seemed to be happening at the same time. I don't know enough about the history of New Orleans or anything like that, but it's pretty amazing that this, you know.
I do know Louisiana used to be French. Mm-hmm. It was French territory before, well, that's what the Louisiana Purchase was. The United States bought from France, Louisiana. So, yeah.
But, you know, it's amazing. It's like the Chicago blues. Like, there's so many different nuances in Chicago blues, and you know, it's amazing these different cities and different regions, mostly, you know, in the U.S. has such a diverse array of music going for it. But New Orleans in particular seems to have a whole different thing going on.
Yeah, it's always been, it's all a little microcosm of a culture, which isn't completely unrelated, but it's not too closely related to everything else going on around it either. It's just got its own sort of flavor. And I think Louisiana has always kind of had its own sort of flavor. Mm-hmm. It's just the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's really cool. I'm glad we listened to this.
Yeah. Well, I knew it was going to be good, and I wasn't disappointed.
No.
I got exactly... I had never actually heard this particular album all the way through. I've certainly heard Dr. John albums and stuff like that, and somehow this one flipped through. I don't know. I guess maybe I wasn't searching that, you know, heavily or something like that. But anyway, it's a good album.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, so I guess we'll end the show there. Thank you for listening if you made it this far. You can check us out at polyphonicpress.com. You can drop us a line at polyphonicpressmusic@gmail.com. If you want to help out the show, you can do that by going to buymeacoffee.com/polyphonicpress. And that's about it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
Yeah, I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.